Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast, where we share relentlessly honest insights, actionable tips, and entrepreneurial stories that will help founders identify and reach their goals.
Hey folks, thanks again for joining the Quiet Light Podcast. Today's episode, as always, is brought to you by Quiet Light Brokerage, where each and every advisor on the team has built, bought, or sold their own online business. I've sold close to 100 million now, and that used to sound like a big number, but you know, Walker and Brian have got one closing in a couple of weeks for 20 million. Brad's working on a, believe it or not, pocket deal for close to 25 million, where he's got two offers on it. Don't be overwhelmed, though, if you've got something for a half a million or 2 million in value. That's kind of our sweet spot. And we're here to help first and foremost. If you don't understand the value of your online business, you probably don't understand the value of your greatest asset. So I would advise you strongly to reach out. Go to quietlightbrokerage.com, click on the valuation form, and let us help. That's what we're here to do first and foremost. Most of the people that we help, we talk to for months or years at a time before they begin to, before they list their business for sale. And one of those folks that I've helped is this guy on the line now. His name is Ramon Van Meer. And let me tell you a little about him. He's actually a good friend of mine now. I was sitting outside a dojo where my son was working out, and I get a call from a former advisor here on the team. He says, hey, look, I sold this business for this guy, Ramon. You remember him? He's a great guy. I loved him. And he's looking to sell the next business. Well, let me just tell you how the numbers went in Ramon's history and a little bit of background. And yes, I'm going to maybe embarrass you a little bit here, Ramon. Ramon is from Holland. He was homeless at one point as a teenager, a serial entrepreneur, not college educated, a single father, came to the United States. First business he sold, and I may not get these numbers exactly right, Ramon, but somewhere around $7,000. Second business he sold, somewhere in the $20,000 range. Third business he sold, somewhere in the $220,000 range. And the next, this is the one that I got the call from and we achieved, was in the just under $9 million range. And he's not done yet. For those watching on video, there's an image behind Ramon's head that says Alpha Paw, and there's a picture of a unicorn back there. And he just explained to me what a unicorn is and what his goal is. A unicorn valuation, for those that don't know, is a business that is valued at $1 billion. Not sold for, but valued. Is that right, Ramon? Valued at $1 billion?
Yeah, valued. But of course, my goal is to exit and be, you know, have that unicorn exit.
Yeah.
One day.
So all around, guys, here, not only is the entrepreneurial journey, the personal journey, the triumphs, there's a few tragedies along the way, as every entrepreneur and individual has in life. Are they not just all impressive? But on top of it all, he's actually just a humble, nice guy. He had to clean up his office in the background before we started recording.
Yes.
He's actually just like the rest of us. It's usually a mess. My camera is zoomed in on only the clean things in my office. I had to ask my my dog to leave before he got sick on the carpet before we recorded. I thought that would be an interesting part of a recording, but I passed on it. Anyway, Ramon, welcome back to the podcast. One of the reasons we're having you here again and having you and thanking you for tolerating us taking up more of your time is that we've produced a video, a little mini film on your story called Quiet Giants. And you tolerated Chris Moore coming out and getting you up at the crack of dawn. Not that you're up at the crack of dawn anyway, But that's going to come out, folks, on October 8th. In conjunction with this podcast. Thank you for listening. If you're listening right now, after the recording, I'd suggest you go to Quiet Light Brokerage and do the search for Quiet Giants, or go to our YouTube page and look for Quiet Giants. You're going to see and hear and get to know Ramon's full story. And it's just simply motivation is what it is. And that's the purpose of this episode. Anyway, I need to stop flapping my jaw. Ramon, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me Again,
thank you for joining us again.
Yeah.
Look, what is it that drives you? What is it that motivates you in the, what, Victor's what, 10 years old now, your son, in the last 10 years, you've gone from a negative net worth to a pretty positive one and are now shooting for a unicorn valuation. What is it? Is it simply money that drives you, or is it the, you know, achieving that next hurdle and the learning and the knowledge? What is it? Help me out.
Yeah. It's definitely not just money. Of course, money is a part of motivation. But if it was just money, I would have retired probably after, you know, selling the soap opera blog.
Sure.
I put everything in a boring ass, you know, index fund and, you know, live happily quiet. It's more the journey. It is building cool things, helping, you know, other people, and also see if you can pull it off, basically. So I, in my career as an entrepreneur, most were failures, but it's all across the board. It's not like I was passionate about, you know, one thing and I just, you know, dedicated 20 years of my life on, you know, becoming the best knitter or like writer or whatever it is. It's, for me, it was always across the board, from selling, you know, custom-made piñatas online that I sold, you know, for $20,000, that website, to a stock broker software that I, you know, helped build and then, you know, sold subscriptions to a soap opera blog that, you know, I never actually watched a soap opera episode in my life. So it's more also like the challenge and see if you can pull it off and learning along the way. I love to learn.
What's fascinating is that you're not Hispanic with piñatas as part of your life growing up. You're not a stockbroker or a trader. You don't know how to do that. It's not what your skill set is. You've never watched a soap opera. I'm assuming now, because Alpha Paw is a pet related business, that you have, I know you do, you've got a dog. I assume you've got, yes, pets, but that doesn't mean that you then become an expert on the subject. How is it that, first and foremost, that you, what do you say to somebody that just has a fear of their lack of experience or knowledge? They say, oh, I don't know how to do that. Well, you don't know how to do this either, yet you're doing it. You don't have experience in all those things that you've successfully built and sold in terms of the niche itself. I would want to say you don't know how to build a billion dollar valuation company, because you didn't work for one and you don't come from the private equity world. You know, you're just a guy hustling and working hard. And you said something in there that was helping others, meaning you're a good human. And I think that makes a difference. But how do you get beyond that, I don't know how to do that, too, I'm not afraid to ask kind of thing, which is a major challenge and roadblock for a lot of people?
I think it comes natural that I'm having like zero ego going into something, and try to ask advice and help from people that have been doing it already or have done it in the past. And then not, you know, my ego was busted 20 years ago, like when I had these big failures, like, you know, I was promoting like parties, like rave parties, like these EDM, like, so I rented a big hall, got famous Dutch DJs playing EDM, and, you know, I was bragging to everybody, this is going to be the party of the century, everybody should come. I was able to get on local TV and newspapers with interviews and boasting, like, oh man, if you're not going to be there, you know, you're going to miss out. I needed 2,000 people to break even, and it was a huge, huge square footage, like a huge hall. And at the end, in the middle of the night, basically, there were like 200 people there. 100 of them were friends, family, you know, people that I knew. So basically 100 sold tickets, and I still had to do a freaking TV interview within the background, an empty hall. And like, I was early 20s and I was so sick to my stomach, of embarrassment, like, fuck, like, you know, what went wrong? And like I worked my ass off for months on this and I really believed in it. And then I still had to stick around and do this freaking TV interview. So long story short, my ego has been, you know, humbled many, many years ago. So not to be afraid or embarrassed to fail or to make mistakes or, you know, I think that really helps me to today to just, you know, fuck it. Anything worse than that is not going to happen anymore. So like, yeah.
I think failure is part of the entrepreneurial journey or, you know, athletic journey or political journey or whatever it might be. Failure is just part of it and you've got to accept it and not take it personally. But personally, have you ever approached someone and said, hey, can you help me with this? Can I pick your brain on this? And they were rude and said, hell no, go away.
That's a good question, actually. Well, definitely now it's easier because I think, you know, the more...
You've had some success. They know who you are.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Or I can ask, you know, I'm friends now with people that have, you know, a big network.
Yeah.
If they Google me, my name, there's some stuff coming up. So now it's becoming easier. And then I always say the biggest asset is your network. And you have to really build that up and that takes time.
Let me give you an example. The last time we saw each other was in St. Pete at the Blue Ribbon Mastermind event. And I remember one of the presenters there was a young woman. I can't remember the business that she was talking about, but she was lured to come be the CEO of the company and she got up and talked about it. Later in an event, I saw you down at the luncheon just picking her brain. Yeah. Walked right up, started talking to her out of the blue. And I think 90% of the people in the room wouldn't feel comfortable with that because she was such a great speaker and so impressive in her pedigree. Yet you walked right up and had a long conversation with her and picked her brain about that. Is that a certain courage that comes with your success or have you always been that way?
No, actually, as you know, like my personality is the opposite. I'm a very introvert person. I don't like public speaking. I don't like to be on stage. I don't like to be on camera, to be honest. I will typically not just walk up to people I don't know. But in those cases, I think it's, especially if you come from a position like, hey, you're doing a great job. I want to learn from you. What I've learned myself is that 90%, 90 plus percent, especially in the industry we are in, people love to help other entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And especially if it comes across authentic, not just like, hey, you know, I just want to use you for your information, but no, like if it's an authentic request.
Yeah.
That's how I met Sam Parr. Sam Parr that runs, he's the founder of HustleCon and the newsletter, The Hustle. And I went to his first conference many, many years ago. It was like 300 people. This was before his big newsletter success. But I found him on Facebook, just messaged him, say, hey, I just went, oh, I bought a t-shirt actually. Say The Hustle or whatever. Took a picture of myself, sent that to him to Facebook Messenger. Hey, I was yesterday there, big fan. I got the t-shirt, check me out. I would love to invite you for a coffee. And he said yes. And I ended up actually investing in his company. We became really good friends. He now advises me in all my companies. And I got a lot of really good relationships through that friendship. And I was just me messaging him.
And just putting yourself out there.
And
I love the part where you're not just trying to, make it one-sided. You're helping Sam as well. You guys, you become friends. Sam's a great guy. For anybody that hasn't checked out The Hustle or Trends or HustleCon or any of that, please do yourself a favor and check it out. Sam's one of the other folks that I would, be part of the Good Human Club. If I was to create such a club, he'd be right there at the top with Ramon. But putting yourself out there, it's funny, the sending the picture. Like the reason we do video like this is because it just breaks down barriers. And you took a picture of yourself and you sent it to him. I had a conversation with, I think it was Scott Volker a few months ago, that he was trying to early on reach somebody. And instead of just reaching out cold, he actually shot a quick video of himself on the screen and said, "Hey, so-and-so, I love your book. This is what I think I could help you with." And, you know, not looking for anything in return. I don't even know if that's exactly what he said, but it was the breaking of the barriers and reaching out and being human and not necessarily being afraid of, what if they say no? We're not teenagers anymore, right? I've got two of those. And, you know, asking a girl out on a date is horrifying. What if they say no, you know?
Yes.
It's okay. Rejection is part of life. Failure is part of being an entrepreneur. So put yourself out there, but help first is what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah. Or be authentic. Like, so now after our podcast, and I did a podcast with Sean at The Hustle as well. So I get some people asking, you know, questions to me too, like especially through LinkedIn. And if I don't answer to them all because I just don't have the time. But if I notice it's just like, or you're just out there just like for yourself, basically, I don't respond. But other messages that are more sincere and, you know, authentic, then I jump on the call with as many people as I can and help them.
So blanket canned emails, stop doing it, people. Get personal, make it sincere, make it authentic. The other podcast that Ramon just mentioned is called My First Million with Sean Puri. I would definitely recommend listening to that. It's part of Sam's group as well, and it's fantastic. You'll get a much deeper, fuller detail of Ramon's story there. If you like listening to podcasts, I'd go to that one as well.
Yeah.
Let's jump
in. Very quick, not to plug Sam too much, but he has he taught me actually how to cold email really good. Like, he's the master of it. Because all his speakers, he doesn't pay actually for his conference. They all come for free. And I think he has an article out there, or like, you just Google it, I think, or a video where he breaks down like, okay, this is, if you want to reach somebody, it doesn't matter if it's the CEO of Pandora or the founder of, you know, Udemy, you know, this is how I did it. And it's pretty, pretty simple. So
definitely check it out, folks. And Sam, if you're listening, we're happy to plug you because you're a great guy and you're helping so many people with what you do every day. Let's talk about your unicorn back there in the background. When you sold, thank you. Yes, he's, for those not on video, he's pointing to it. When you sold your last business through QuietLight, you had never really done physical product e-commerce businesses. You found this one. You took what was a business doing less than $1 million a year in revenue and doing some amazing, amazing things. A friend of ours in common, Matthew DeWalt, who's a former, and I get this wrong, he wasn't the CFO of Priceline, but he was up there. He calls you one of the top five digital marketers he's ever met. And being a guy at Priceline, you can tell he's met a lot of people. Ramon's trying to be humble, shaking his head back there, going, "No, that's just, you know, I give him too much beer. That's the why he says that." That's that's not the case at all. You made the leap into e-commerce. How is it that you go about saying you take this business that's doing less than $1 million in revenue and you're trying to shoot for a $1 billion valuation? How long does it take? How do you figure out, we talked about this in the interview for the book. How did you reverse engineer what it takes to sell your business for $100 million, which I think is your goal, which may be changing and growing? How did you do that? Was it, again, more conversations? Do you read? How does it work?
Yeah. In this case, I bought this business. And so there was already an existing supply chain and existing product. So then I can just focus on the growth. But because I never really done it, so I had to learn along the way, is go look at other companies that you admire. And first, actually, Sam, again, I hate to be broke a record, but he introduced me to another friend of his, Roman Khan. And he is also like a legend in e-commerce. And I ask, like, hey, can I pick your brain? I like, how do you do this? How do you do that? Then after the first meeting, I send them an email, say, hey, you know, I've never done this. I don't know how to ask this properly. Or like, for sure you get many of these emails or requests. Do you want to become my mentor? Like, is it okay to mentor? And you know, he said yes. So he started mentoring me.
What's in it for him on the mentoring aspect?
So we go back and forth. It's like, I want to give him equity. So typically in mentorship or an advisory role, you give up equity or phantom units. But up to today, he has not accepted it yet. So we're going to have to fight for it later that he's going to accept my equity. But typically an advisor or mentor, you give equity in your company.
Did you offer that right away, or did you just go the humble, please, would you consider being a mentor? Can I pick your brain?
No, I offered right away because, and if he accepts it or not, he's going to get it. I'm just going to deposit it into his, you know, son's bank account or whatever. But I think it, I approach everything that if you help me become a better or, you know, learn or help me in the business to get more revenue, I want to share that with you. I have to share it with you. It has to be a win-win situation.
What's your situation with goal planning and things of that nature? I'm thinking back to the sharing of, you know, wealth and goals. And in the last exit, I know you wrapped up some employees and they benefited from it as well. But I remember one of the buyers visited you personally and said that your goals on the whiteboard behind the conference table that you guys were meeting at were just incredible. And it was more about the number of people that you wanted to help. When it comes to, we get the connection and asking for help and mentoring, and in this case saying, hey, look, I'll give you some, you know, a small share in the business. And of course they're like, come on, let me just buy you a beer and we'll have some conversations and it leads to a great friendship. And I love that you're going to just deposit money to his son's account, whether he likes it or not. That, again, good human, doing the right thing, thinking about others first. But goal setting, like, how did you pick a number of the exit that you wanted? And how do you manage your day-to-day task to get not wrapped up in just responding to emails and always looking at that bigger picture? It's a challenge, I would imagine.
Yes, but I, like, for me personally, and everybody has different styles or opinions about it, but for me personally, I like to have an exit strategy when I start something, because then it's, for me, easier to reverse engineer. So to give you an example, my initial target was to sell AlphaPaw for $100 million. Then
minor.
If you know,
that's not too big of a goal. Okay.
Yeah. But, and to be honest, like, even if I didn't hit it and still sell for $60 million, it's going to be a great exit. So it's not like, I don't use it like, oh, if I don't hit that target, then I'm a loser or it's a failure. I think it's just, if, you reverse engineer from your ideal target, so $100 million, you kind of know, okay, selling on you know, a marketplace online is not going to, the buyer is not going to be that. Like, you know what type of buyers you have to go after. Then you can do research, okay, for $100 million pet company, what type of company or who would be our ideal buyer or potential buyer? So you can make a hit list. I have one here too. And you can make a hit list of potential buyers. Then you can look and do research. What other similar companies did they have bought in the past, and what did they look at? Did they look at revenue? Did they look at profit? Did they look at just brand? Did they look at user growth? Like, there are different metrics, and in every different level, like maybe, you know, a website up to a million is more focused on EBITDA, or 10 million. Like, there's specific ranges where, for example, the metric is just EBITDA. Like, profit, last 12 months, profit, and you know put a formula on it. But you know, $100 million acquisitions, they also look at other things. So in the pet space, for example, in other spaces, they look more often at revenue. And you know, it doesn't really matter if you have 12% profit or 18%. It's more revenue. So then you can reverse engineer. Okay, in order to sell for 100 million, we need to have our metrics at XYZ. So we need to do 30 million in revenue, 10 million, whatever those numbers are, not accurate. But you know what revenue, what profit, where to focus on. Then you start talking to, like, I'm already talking, even though I don't have an exit date in mind, I already start talking with bankers and private equity and try to talk. I reach out to people that work at my kill list companies and just try to pick their brains and just to, you know, like, how many acquisitions, like what was the last acquisition? What was the valuation? Why did they bought XYZ company and why not the other company? Like things like that. So you can already, you know, basically steer the universe basically to that outcome, if that makes sense.
And you can do that while juggling the company that you're growing as well, obviously. For those that are listening instead of watching, I want you to understand that Ramon's sitting there in jeans and a t-shirt. I'm sorry, shorts and a t-shirt. He lives in California. Yes. Fortunately, safe from the forest fires at the moment. Regular guy. You're not in a big corporate office with a team of 100 employees. All in, let's talk about staffing and whatnot. All in with employees and VAs. How many do you have today? Ballpark. I know hard to keep track of them all, but sometimes.
I know. So we made the decision 2 months ago to bring fulfillment in-house. So for people that are not in e-commerce, when you sell a physical product, a big part of your, you know, operations is like you need to store all your products in a warehouse, and then you need a company or a team to put it in shipping boxes and ship it, you know, ship your product to the customer. So I decided to bring it in-house, and so we have a warehouse, an office in Las Vegas, and including the warehouse team, we're now NVAs, you know, less than 20 people.
Less than 20 people, including the warehouse folks. How many folks are at the warehouse?
Nine.
So prior to that, you were like 10 people.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing. And in regards to the warehouse, you know, you're not a warehouse operator, you know, running the fulfillment center. You're choosing to do that. Why did you make that choice versus outsourcing to a 3PL? Was it because of that big picture goal and growth that you needed in margins, or is it just a need to control all of the touch points of your business?
Yeah. It's like the fulfillment in-house versus using a 3PL another company to do it for you is an ongoing debate, basically. Typically, people don't advise you to bring it in-house because, and I've learned now as well, like I still don't regret the decision, but I am living it now that it is it's like basically running a separate, totally different business with different challenges, issues, etc. But three reasons. I think having control over the user experience of getting your packages on time and, you know, the correct products, that's a huge benefit versus, you know, going with a 3PL doesn't mean there's no headache too. Like I had a full-time person basically, not full-time, but like every day there were issues of, the wrong product sent, or they had delays and they were like 4 days behind. Like people ordered last week and still products were not shipped out, or they suddenly found six pallets of my products in a warehouse. Like they just
sounds like Amazon. My goodness.
Yeah, exactly. So having more control over when the products go out, like now, for example, we get emails because sometimes or often now, you place an order in the morning, yeah. You already get your tracking number in the afternoon. And we get emails saying like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's so fast. You know, I appreciate it. Yeah. And cost saving, definitely, you know, 3PLs, they make money on a lot of things, you know, pick and pack fee really adds up. So
the person, when you decided to open your own fulfillment center, you're nuts, by the way, but good yes. for you. It's obviously going to work out. Did you bring somebody on with a ton of, you know, fulfillment experience, obviously, to sort of run that ship for you?
Yes. So when I made the decision, all my friends and advisors advised me not to do it. Mm-hmm. And, I'm a little stubborn in that sense of like, I want to try it. Like my mindset too, I think this is also important, is that 99% of your decisions, you can always go back from. The only thing that won't be hurt is your ego, basically. But if you don't care for your ego, okay, we'll bring fulfillment in-house. It's a shit show, headache, fuck it. We'll just move it back. I will just hire a couple trucks and ship all my products back to the same 3PL that I've worked with. Like, there's not really, it's not the end of the world, basically. And, you know, I like it. I learn a lot. The big thing is when you do it yourself and the whole team, everybody in my team, including myself, is like, we're trying to find ways, how can we ship this more efficient? How can we make this box smaller? Yeah. How can we maybe put this package in this other package so we don't have to pay double shipping and we just do one? So everybody's mindset is about like, how can we make the user experience better and how can we make this cost more cost efficient?
Mm. And you don't necessarily get that from a 3PL.
No, yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I have friends that are huge e-com brands, work with a 3PL, and they're still just a number, like, yeah. for the 3PL. Like, they don't have...
It makes sense. You know, I think you've met Bill D'Alessandro. We've had him on the podcast. He's a friend of Quiet Lights down in Charlotte. Elements Brands, by the way, they have a pet-related brand as well, a pet food-related brand as well. And do the same thing. They fulfill on their own because they can do it better, and the people in the fulfillment center care. It's not for everyone, obviously. We're not advocating everybody go develop a fulfillment center. I like to say, be careful of promoting yourself to your own level of incompetence. Ramon has yet to determine what that level of incompetence is, obviously, because your heights keep growing, and it's pretty damn amazing. Let's talk about growth through acquisition versus growth through SKU expansion. Mm-hmm. Which approach are you taking? Because when you started this journey, you bought one brand which had more or less one SKU, if I recall, that did the bulk of the revenue. Have you simply expanded SKUs for the most part, and that's accounting for most of your growth, or have you continued to acquire other brands to put into the, you know, Alpha Paw portfolio, and that's helping you grow more?
Yeah. In my case, I've done both. When I bought this business, it was just one product, one SKU. But the product has a ceiling, basically. There's only X amount of potential customers that need this product. So it was not, this is not a product for all dogs. It's for, you know, specific breeds. So there was a ceiling. So, you know, I knew I cannot get to the 100 million or unicorn status or whatever with just this one product, right? So then I bought a couple other smaller brands that actually were only selling on Amazon, and took them over and then brought them off Amazon and just added, rebranded those products to Alpha Paw and started selling them on Shopify, in our Shopify store.
Hey, in that regard, before I forget.
Yes.
Amazon versus Shopify or your own website. You're really not an Amazon guy here. You're driving most of this revenue through your own traffic, owning the customers, creating repeat experiences and things of that nature. Is that an accurate statement?
Yes. And I know several people, and we are both friends with several people that are very successful on Amazon.
Sure.
Me personally, I think if you want to build a brand, like a real big brand, eventually you're going to have to go off of Amazon. In my opinion, you know, Amazon owes your customers. I think there's more value if you own your customer and your customer data. I know Joe Valley has two dogs. One is called, I forgot your dog's name, you know,
Dasher.
Pepe. And
Dasher and Willow, for those that want to know.
Dasher and Willow, and they're X amount, you know, they're, one is 2 years, one is 6 years, whatever, and the breeds. Then, you know, I think there's a huge asset if you build a customer database of, you know, that information. That's going to be value. That's going to be a high value for a potential buyer.
When you have that customer database of information, does it help inform your decision on your next SKU expansion or purchase in terms of brands?
Yeah. So especially when you already have a customer base or have a huge following on social media, instead of, you know, making an assumption, oh, for sure people will love, you know, XYZ, you know, let's just start this product and buy a couple containers. What we typically do is following. We first ask our current customer base, is this a product that you use? If so, how often do you buy it? Where do you buy it? Like a survey about a product idea. And we share it across social media, our email list, et cetera, et cetera. Then if that's a positive signal, and I know, you know, surveys are not waterproof, you know, but if there's a positive signal, we try to drop ship first that same product. So we can learn the economics behind running Facebook ads for this product, without buying, you know, $100,000, $1 million, whatever there is of inventory. Run Facebook ads, email marketing, all kinds of stuff, and then we can see how much it costs to acquire a customer and what's the return on ad spend, etc. If those are also positive, then we start looking into sourcing, you know, the product ourselves, and then that whole process starts of sourcing ourselves.
That's a great way to do it, so that you're not investing a ton of money in inventory and have it be a bust each and every time.
Yeah.
Quick questions back to the SKU expansion versus buy and bolt on. What percentage of your and ballpark numbers, call it revenue, is from businesses that you've bought versus maybe expanded SKUs from those businesses? And that's probably an impossible answer to question to answer.
Yeah. Well, I could answer this is that in the beginning, to increase revenue, I acquired several brands.
Okay. Yeah.
Now I'm more on the other side where I just try to develop, because a couple things, like, you never know. I'm still looking, but like, I want to, you know, we're working on healthy dog cookies, right? For my son is involved in that project. But there's no dog cookie business for sale at the moment, right? So it's often we come up with ideas and, you know, there's no company that you can buy.
Right.
So we're not going to wait for an acquisition to get into that product SKU. We just then start ourselves. But I'm a big believer in growth by acquisition, because especially if it has other assets besides, you know, sales data or sales history, if they have an email list, if they have a customer database with addresses that you can send, you know, direct mail to, maybe they are also on Amazon and have a huge history and a large, you know, a lot, very many reviews, things like that. So we do the approach basically both. But at this stage, because we need to add a lot more products, we're actually launching most of our products ourselves.
Gotcha.
Like, it's not by acquisition.
Yeah. How important in your unicorn valuation, your personal exit goal, is the recurring revenue aspect of the business model that you have? You know, versus, this is for folks I'm talking about, a one-off sale of a grilling apron versus, you know, the propane that people have to get on a regular basis. Of course, you get that locally for the tank, but recurring revenue versus one-off sales in this large valuation approach, is it critical? Are you shooting for a certain percentage of total revenue being recurring, or is it just case-by-case basis?
Most of our decisions are basically have to answer yes to the question, will this eventually get us more recurring revenue, basically?
So
it's very important. I think it's going to help for your valuation. It's good for your own revenue, because it compounds, right, your revenue growth, especially if you have a good product that people will keep buying. When we look at new products, the number one question is this a recurring product? Is this a product that everybody needs, you know, your customer needs every day, every week, every month, whatever that answer is.
Okay, good.
But it's not, if the answer is no, it doesn't mean that we right away scrap that idea, but then it really has to have some other things, like a higher margin or like super, you know, a big AOV or other questions. But yeah, recurring is a big, very important for us.
Got it. For folks that are hearing this for the first time, I want you to definitely check out the Quiet Giants episode, where our CMO and filmmaker Chris Moore dragged Ramon out of the bed at the crack of dawn, bored him to death with preparations and questions and all that. We get to see Ramon in his real world and his real story, and it's inspiring. Simply put, I think the title, one of the words is the fighter in there, because a little bit of your background, but also because of your just focus on never giving up and fighting for success while being a good human at the same time, being a single father to Victor, and doing what you're doing in terms of, you know, the organic cookie business there, or dog biscuit business. Is by the way, is that website live yet?
It is live. If you watch this, here it is. You have a dog. This is going to be my first plug I ever did, but it's for my son, so I don't feel that bad. VictorsCookies.com, and he's going to donate for each bag of cookies that he sells. He donates one meal to a shelter dog.
Wow.
So his mission is actually pretty simple. It's like his mission is to feed every single shelter dog in the world.
VictorsCookies.com, feed every shelter dog in the world. Pretty, again, the Van Meer ambition is so damn impressive. I mean, he's 10. He wants to feed every dog shelter in the world. The goals... You don't set them lightly, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, he came, I'm, you know, a little bit, very proud, not a little bit, but yeah, he came up on him with himself. So one of my coworkers shot a video, like a commercial, like an ad with him. And I didn't read the script. I didn't saw anything until it was a finished product. And then, yeah, he came up with the idea, like, yeah, my mission is to feed every single shelter dog in the world.
That's like, an incredible.
I love it.
I told Ramon, folks, I told him a month or so when I heard about this that I wanted to have Victor on the podcast, and I'm going to make good on that. Victor is probably more of an introvert than Ramon, so it may be cute and shy and stumbling, and I'll pull as much information out of him as I can when the time comes. I think everybody here should go to victorscookies.com and buy some dog biscuits, organic dog biscuits for your pet or your neighbors. Do that today,
and,
please. I'm going to do
it. We make it ourselves, so it's not like a white label, you know, that's another company, baker's making it or whatever. It's like we actually, it's our own recipe that we own. And then we have a professional kitchen. And of course, he has a baker, actually has an employee already helping.
10 years old, he's got an employee.
Yes, and she's amazing.
If I recall the story, you didn't go out and buy equipment raw from a manufacturer or anything like this. You found a business that was established but older and modified it, is that still hold true? Where you found this through Craigslist originally?
I
just want you to just cover this real quickly, but this is what entrepreneurship is all about, folks. Is that you have to go out and seek it and find it and attack it and climb that hill, and don't let traditional ways get in your way in these obstacles that, you know, you're like, I don't know how to do that, or I've never done that, or, you know, they're going to say no. You got to go out and find a way to do it. And that's exactly what you did in this situation. Okay, I'll be quiet now. Tell us what you did to actually find this business.
Yeah. So I don't know anything about baking, cooking, especially in the dog cookies. So I just put an ad out on Craigslist, looking for somebody that knows something about dog cookies. I will pay for your time to pick your brain. I forgot, like $100 for an hour or something, just, or a half hour, just to jump on the call. And, you know, sometimes you don't get anything at all. But in this case, in the same day, I got an email back from a very nice gentleman, saying that he used to have a dog cookie company, very small, but still was selling in some local supermarket chains and pet stores. And he was actually also an author, turned out to be an author of a book about healthy dog food, like, you know, what should you give your dog, what not. And that was really important, that, you know, the cookies Victor is going to sell are healthy. And yeah, jumped on a call with him, not actually with the mindset, oh, I want to buy this. I just went very open-minded to it, just tried to learn as much as possible. And just in that conversation, I just asked him, hey, like, do you still own this company and the recipes? And he said, yeah, I have still everything. Oh, are you open to selling it? So, and he was. So we bought 8 original recipes that we own now, and alongside with everything. A very sweet man. He even sent us his actual cookie cutters and his dough roller. Like he sent us the package with all his whole thing. And then the same thing. Okay, now we have the recipe, and we know a little bit more about it, like, you know, what to do, what not to do, what licensing, permits. He taught us everything. Now we need to find somebody to make it. I cannot make, you know, 100 bags a day, or Victor neither. He still has to go to school for a couple of years at least. And put an ad out looking for, you know, this is the idea, my son and I working on a dog cookie company. And turned out the first or second email we got was Jamie, who is the head pastry chef at Caesars Entertainment. So not only knows she knows how to make anything pastry, like from cookies to whatever, she also knows the economics, like calculating how much up to the cent, you know, of ingredient goes into each cookie. If we just do one cookie less, then we can, you know, save X amount of dollars per bag. So also like the economics behind it. Amazing find.
Brilliant. I love it. You just didn't know where that journey was going to take you when you put an ad in Craigslist, or where the journey was going to take you when you bought your first business on Flippa, which is, I think, where you started and eventually sold it, that first one, for twice what you bought it for, which was a big sale of $7,000 or so, give or take. It's an amazing journey, Ramon. You're a good man, a good human, a great entrepreneur, and a good friend. I appreciate you tolerating another 50 minutes of me poking you with questions.
Oh, anytime.
I'm real excited to have the public see the Quiet Giants episode with a fighter, you, Ramon Van Meer, because it's motivating and inspiring, and I think it'll get some people off the I wish and onto the I'm doing it, I'm taking some action, and I'm moving forward. I expect to succeed, even though I will fail along the way here and there, and that doesn't bother me at all. I'm still going to do it. If Ramon can do it, I'm going to do it too, kind of attitude.
Yeah.
So you're a good man. I'm going to, as soon as this is over, I'm going to victorscookies.com and look for an order. So you tell him to look for an order to send to North Carolina here shortly. I beg everybody else to do so as well. And check out AlphaPaw. Is it alphapaw.com? Yeah. Check out AlphaPaw and all the products, and sign up, folks. See how Ramon does the marketing. Become a customer. Pay attention. If you want to learn something, become a customer, and you're going to see how they treat you and how they reach you and how they inspire you and help you first and foremost, and then you become a customer as well. And maybe someday you too will have a unicorn valuation, $1 billion. We're going to have you back on, as long as you promise when you I just said I'm sorry for taking up more of your time, and now I'm saying I'm going to have you back on. But as long as you promise that when you hit that $100 million exit or whatever the number might be, that's going to have so many zeros, it's going to make most people's head spins, that you'll still be wearing shorts and a t-shirt and your high tops, and you're not going to change at all. Promise?
Never. Yeah, of course.
All right. Last question. What's your favorite type of a drink? Beer, whiskey, and what's your vice there?
Well, you should know, because we've been, you know, down that rabbit hole a couple times. But I typically, I don't drink often, but if I drink, it's vodka.
Okay. Random question. There's the answer, folks. Ramon, you're a good man. Appreciate it. Everybody, look for the Quiet Giants episode coming out same day as this, October 8th. Thanks, Ramon.
Awesome.
Today's podcast was produced by Rise25 and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast subject or guest, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.